Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen, here with life coach Cindy Chavez. This is your daily dose of happy, and we're so happy you decided to join us today. We are once again introducing ourselves, as we have been for the last week or so, here on Local Cable Access, in addition to talking to our regular podcast listeners and to our listeners on YouTube and on PRN. I mean, we got listeners all over the place. But it's fun to be adding a new audience, and Cindy has helped me do a couple of those shows, introducing listeners to the topic of the Law of Attraction. Last time she was on, we also talked about the emotional guidance scale, and we're going to kind of pile onto that one a little bit more, talking about the upper end of that scale. But before we get going, first of all, Cindy, you're in the dark there. What's going on there, girl?
Well, I just saw the most interesting meme that somebody made. It was a picture of a satellite view of a hurricane. You know, the swirly satellite view of the eye of a hurricane, and it said Louisiana's national flower. We've had five blooms this year. We are so blessed. So we, the United States has gotten hit by 11 hurricanes this year.
Wow.
The prior record was 9.
So a record.
Louisiana, where I am, this is 5 for us, which is a lot of hurricanes in one season, and the season still has 30 days or more to go.
Yeah.
So we are expecting Hurricane Zeta. We've gone all the way through the English alphabet. You know, once a storm gets to be from a tropical depression to a tropical storm, they give it a name. And every year they list the names A through Z of the storms. And when we get all the way through Z, which doesn't always happen, it's only happened one other time in 2005, we have to start on the Greek alphabet. And so this is our second Greek alphabet storm. We had Delta, and later today, we're going to get Zeta. And you can tell how dark it is in my office. It's usually very bright, but that's because outside it pretty much looks like nighttime. And so we're battening down the hatches for another hurricane.
Which you guys have a lot of experience doing. And now, of course, people who are tuning in and catching us now on local cable access have a better idea of when we're recording these shows, because, of course, Zeta is now in their history as they're looking at this. So you have an idea of how far in advance we do the recordings. But the good news is that you guys have the experience. I mean, nobody likes going through hurricanes. But I have to say, even though we talked before the show about how we always have to take every major storm seriously, anything from a tropical storm on up, it's helpful when you have that background to have the confidence, isn't it? I mean, you're not feeling terrified like you have to leave town right now. You're feeling like, yeah, we're in a pretty good shape. We're in a pretty good spot.
Right, because we've learned how to, I mean, you know, they can change direction, but we're watching it, and we start watching it very carefully over the course of the last couple of days and watching its direction. And it looks like we are going to not get too much of the worst part of the storm. You know, it's like we were talking recently, my husband and I, we're like, where in the world can you move where you're not dealing with either earthquakes, volcanoes, tropical storms, hurricanes, tornadoes, wildfires? Like, you know, is there somewhere that's not having these things? So, you know, it is what it is. I had somebody that lived in Kansas City for a long time say to me, oh, I don't know how you can live down there with those hurricanes. And I said, well, at least we know they're coming for a few days. Like, you get a tornado and it's just like, what's that? Is there a train in the front yard? What's that sound, right? They happen fast. And these latest storms, with this, you know, with the climate change that's happening, the latest storms that we've had are spurring tornadoes.
Mm, yeah.
And I think I'm more afraid of that than I am of the
understandable. Storm, yeah.
Tornadoes, when they tell us there's been one sighted, it's like, what do we do? Because I got a weather alert on my phone that said that a tornado had been spotted near my neighborhood and that I should take cover. It was from the National Weather Alert, right?
Right.
So you hit them on your phone. It says, take cover in a basement. We live below sea level. Like, none of our houses have basements. but we're doing fine.
That's good. That's good. And I have to say also, that is where it is important to have that positive attitude. We like to talk about that, attitude that things are going to work out well, because it does help. It helps you get through stuff like this.
And, absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely. You know, I heard something recently. It's kind of what we're talking about later in the show today, but I was sharing it with one of my groups this morning. It talked about this simple equation of that for every, I'm just going to say unpleasurable or uncomfortable or disappointing emotion or feeling that you have. And we all have those, right? We hear bad news and we immediately say, oh, okay, for every one of those that you have, you need to have three happy or good or pleasant or pleasurable, comfortable, you know, those feeling emotions. Well, you know, I never call emotions good or bad because right. I think that they are all valid in giving us information that's useful. So I don't like putting, like a lot of people will say anger is in the bad emotion category. And I don't like to do that because once we've labeled something bad, we start staying away from it. And sometimes yes. we have anger and it's telling us something we need to know. It's telling yes. us something important, right? Something about our own value system. And so I kind of prefer to call them, like we've said, they're either preferred or not preferred, like an emotion you prefer or one you don't prefer. But if you have three emotions you prefer to every one that you don't prefer, you will build what the scientists call emotional resilience.
Yeah.
Right? And so one of the ways that you can do this, and this is what I was telling my group, I asked my group today to show me pictures of their favorite baby animals. Oh. And the response I got, this whole thread filled up with people's pictures of their kittens and their puppies and, you know, just all. And what I was telling them is that, so if you need to take a break from what's going on in the world, from something that's causing you to have a emotion you don't prefer, that scrolling through those, you know, Googling the baby animals and scrolling through them for a few minutes, it's actually not a waste of time. I mean, whenever you see a baby animal, don't you smile?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Right? Have you ever seen the YouTube videos of the baby goats that are wearing pajamas and they're hopping around?
Right. Oh, yeah.
How can you see that and not smile? So, yeah.
There was a great one just the other day on Facebook, I think it was. Somebody had put together a sort of a compilation of dogs wagging their tails. And the best one in the whole group was, I'm not even sure what kind of dog he was. He was a medium-sized dog. Maybe it was a chocolate lab. I'm not 100% sure because I was looking at him from the back. And he and his buddy, they were in a boat. And they were on the edge of the boat. And the one, his feet were moving. His tail was wagging. He was so excited that they were out on the boat. It was great. He could hardly contain himself.
That's fantastic. So, that's helpful.
Yeah, it is. It's one of my wife's favorite things to do. She loves going through video compilations like that that just kind of pick you up because they feel so good to look at them. And it's a nice, easy way to get to that higher vibration place on the emotional guidance scale that you and I talked about in our last show together.
It's really important that we recognize emotions that don't feel good and process them and not just ignore them or shove them down.
Yes.
Right? But we also don't have to stay there in that emotion forever.
Exactly.
Like wallowing in it. Yep. Sometimes that's important, but most of the time.
Not really. No, not most of the time.
Recognize it, call it what it is, process it, and then go look at a baby animal wagging its tail.
That's right. Before we get started on that, I just wanted to share some information that came from a couple emails. We actually got this a few weeks back, but you and I have been doing our last couple episodes in preparation for reaching out to this new audience on cable access. So we really didn't get to it. It didn't really fit with what we were doing those days. But I wanted to acknowledge them in part because they're so happy and positive about us here on the show. Deborah is the person who wrote in, and she just wanted to share. First of all, she'd actually had written this one as an App Store review, which was really nice of her. But she said she's thrilled to have reconnected, which suggests to me that she'd actually been a listener before and come back, which is good. She says, we have a fabulous crew, put out heartfelt and heartwarming content, really on the edge, bleeding edge of reality. What a delight to listen, and so much incredible content from the wonderful Cindy Chavez and her Dakota Ring, bringing her brilliant insight to the incredible Neville. That's a reference to Neville Goddard, whom Cindy and I have talked about quite a bit on the show, and we will be introducing the local cable access people to that over the course of time. And then in a second email she sent, she gave some more information about it. She says, it was through you and Cindy's decoder ring that I became aware of Neville, which became a big part of my Abraham/LOA puzzle. So it was like so many people she's drawing from a variety of different teachers and gurus and so forth. She says, it was so great to listen again today. I heard the At Your Command Part 2 episode. That's a reference to a book by Neville Goddard. Fabulous stuff. Coincidentally, last night I had a dream in which I was 7 weeks pregnant with a most unwelcome surprise, not to say a medical miracle. It was so much more than a dream, though. And I knew it was hugely significant, and I was led to listen to this episode, the one that she was referring to, which talks about being impregnated with and given birth to desires. Aha! That's what it was about. Anyway, thank you so much for all that you do. I am thrilled to reconnect and so looking forward to delving into all of your new programs. Wonderful stuff, and so appreciate you all. So how about that?
That's fantastic.
Wow. It is fantastic, yeah. We have great, great listeners. We have great people following us. There's just no two ways about it. But it's also really nice to know. I mean, you and I have done, I think it's, what, 10, 11 Neville Goddard books, page by page. It's nice to know that we have an impact on people when we do those.
I get a lot of feedback about our Neville shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
let's go back to what we were talking about in our last show together, which was the emotional guidance scale. And before we started today, we kind of thought, well, why don't we focus on some of the stuff that's at the top? Because the scale, as it was, as it's usually constructed, is based on one that Abraham Hicks put together a number of years ago, which they called the emotional guidance scale. And at the top of their scale, I think it's like a 22-point scale. So at the very bottom is depression, you know, really, really low vibration stuff. And at the very top, love, of course, that would not surprise anybody that's at the top. But it actually has six different words at the top. And Abraham is basically saying, well, these are all equivalent. And we thought, well, you know, that's an interesting topic because do we really think of it that way?
Right.
Yes. Some of those words are happiness, clarity, knowledge. I think knowledge, that's an interesting one to have up on top. Joy, passion. Yeah. I mean, there's a bunch of them up there. And I don't know about you. When I first saw that list and I saw those six at the top, I said to myself, that's an interesting combination. I never really considered them to be equal. But I have to say over time, I think they have, in my mind, become equal. I think they're pretty much the same thing. I just never really thought about them that way. So before we even get into how do you get up there, I just wanted to see what your take is on that. Did you feel similar reactions?
Yes, I did. And I think it's because they're sort of diverse. And it's like, I mean, a lot of times you hear joy and happiness sort of, even the dictionary is probably going to say those are synonyms, right? But then when you get into clarity, knowledge, passion, but then love. And
yeah,
the thing that strikes me about that list is that I think of love as a verb.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I've always thought of love as a verb more than I've thought of love as a feeling. Now, I know we can feel love. I remember, I have a memory. I have a half-sister, and when she was born, I was 11. And we did not, at the time, we did not live together. Shortly after that, we did live together. But at the time, I did not live with them, and I went on vacation with them. And because I think at the time I was maybe 12 or 13, and she was, you know, one or two, and we went to Disneyland, and my parents would leave us to, they would go out a couple of times. They went out for a couple hours and left me with her because, you know, I was old enough to babysit her, or sister sit her. But over the course of that week, I spent a lot of time with her, and I grew really fond of her. And I remember that when the vacation was over and I went back, because I lived with my mother at the time, when I went back home, I missed her so much.
Wow.
And it's the first time in my life, you know, even with my parents being divorced, it's the first time in my life that I recalled having this such sensing such a great love for someone that was new in my life, right? Because she was just a little toddler, and I missed her so much. And so I know, yes, we feel love, and we use it like it's an emotion or a feeling. And yet at the same time, love is also a verb, and we can choose to take action that is loving, even if we're not feeling the feeling, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we teach people about this all the time in the framework of loving themselves. Like when I was in coaching school, there was a saying in one of my books that said something like, if we treated other people the way we treat ourselves, we'd all be in jail. Because we're really hard on ourselves sometimes.
Yeah.
And we often deny ourselves things, and, you know, we skip meals, or we don't give ourselves enough water. I mean, I'm talking about really basic things. Or we don't allow ourselves, we don't have good sleep hygiene, maybe. Right? We do this in lots of different ways. And if we were responsible for a pet or a child, we would be making sure they got their nap. Yeah. We would be making sure they had their food and their water. And, you know, every morning we give the dogs fresh water. Every few times a day we feed the baby, you know. It's like we take this great care, and those are loving actions.
They are.
Right? And so I think that might be the quickest way to get yourself to the top of that emotional scale is to just take some loving action, whether you're feeling it or not, and take some self-loving action. I talk to people all the time, and just 2 days ago I spoke with someone, and they did not sound like they were in good shape on the phone, right? Really struggling, really having a rough time, and I asked them, are you sleeping?
Oh, yeah.
And they said no. I already knew they were going to say no. I could hear it. I could hear it in their voice. So taking some kind of loving action, whether it's towards yourself or towards someone else, might be the best way to pop yourself up to the top of that emotional scale.
When you can't find
the joy, when you can't find the happiness, when you don't feel like you are passionate about anything at the moment, take the loving action.
It makes sense, because ultimately, if we aren't feeling it, what better way to feel it? I mean, if you're not feeling it at the time and you're going through the motions because you know you're supposed to do it, if you spend any of that time focused on what it is you're actually doing and how it's benefiting them, you're going to feel good about it pretty soon. And you're going to start feeling that love. The only way that it's not going to be helpful is if you deliberately hold yourself away from it. Which we are all capable of doing. Let's be perfectly honest. We can certainly do that. But like you say, I agree. That's probably the easiest way to get to the top of the chart.
Right. And here's something else. Yeah. If you're taking loving action towards someone else, and you're, instead of feeling the love, you're feeling resentment.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That is a sign that you're overgiving, and that you're not showing yourself enough love. You know, none of us want to be in the space where all the love we ever show is just to ourselves, right? I mean, we don't want to be selfish. We don't want to be, narcissistic. But there does have to be balance of showing love to yourself and to others. It's always, people use that oxygen on the airplane metaphor all the time. What do they tell you? If you're with a child or someone that you're taking care of, put the oxygen on yourself first.
Right.
So that you can then, you have what you need and you can take care of them. It's the same kind of thing. It's make sure you're doing those things for yourself as well.
I would even point out, and this is going to be a little bit controversial from the point of view of some people in what we call conscious creator or law of attraction circles. But I would even argue that people who are, you use the term narcissistic or selfish, or, you know, so self-absorbed that they're not paying attention to others. I would argue that those people aren't really loving themselves. They may have reached a level of what we'll call vibration, because that's what we usually call it, that is their high level, but I would argue it's not the same level as when you or I feel love. I think it's a lower vibration feeling.
Well, I totally agree. And that's why I said, you know, that none of us consciously that want to be loving, sometimes we're concerned about doing things for ourselves because we don't want to appear self-absorbed or right. narcissistic, right? But that's not how that shows up.
Yeah.
It's I don't think it's a valid concern. We don't have to worry about that. Take care of yourself. Show yourself love because the world is a reflection. The world is one big mirror for us, especially our relationships. So if you're taking care of yourself and you're showing yourself respect and you're showing yourself love, then those things are going to be mirrored back to you from other people. You will notice people showing you more love, more respect mm-hmm. if you're giving that to yourself. When you hear the expression that we teach people how to treat us, that's how we teach people. Mm-hmm. It's by example. And the example is, how do you treat yourself? How do you carry yourself? What do you tolerate? Right.
And the word balance just keeps coming to my mind as you're saying all that, because I mean, we can all think of examples of people who are so self-absorbed and narcissistic. And by the same token, we can also think of people that we know who are just totally self-sacrificing. All they ever do is self-sacrifice. And neither one of those is healthy. They're two extremes. They're very far apart from each other, but they're both extremes. We need the balance. We need to be something in the middle so that we're benefiting ourselves and benefiting others. It's got to be both.
I think we talked about this last week maybe, but the idea of that some of us have been taught when we're younger that it's better to give than to receive.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when we go to lunch with someone and someone says, oh, here, let me get the bill. We go, no. I'll get it. I remember there was one person, every time I went out, we had an epic fight over paying the check. We literally started like if one of us got up and used the restroom in the middle of the meal, we'd grab the waiter and pay for it, you know, right. in advance. Because and we realized, okay, that's fine. That's fine to be generous and to be giving. But you're also, if you're always doing that and you're yes. never allowing anyone to, you know, pick up the tab, so to speak, whether it's literally or metaphorically, you're putting out this energy. You're basically saying no to abundance flowing in. You're just saying no, no more. And the thing is with that whole, it's better to give than to receive. You have to have a receiver to be able to give. And whenever you receive, you're allowing someone else the joy of giving. So think if we all had, you know, I don't know that we can ever achieve like perfect balance and equilibrium with all of our giving and receiving, but if we could as a world, right? Think what it would be like. See how much balance we would bring to the world.
Oh, yeah.
Because we would be comfortable receiving and giving. And there wouldn't be any scarcity mentality. I mean, that's where scarcity mentality shows up, right?
It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, very true.
So it's a good thing to practice. I always teach my clients to practice building their receiving muscles.
I like the way you said that, and you've actually explained that in a number of different ways over time on various episodes that we've done, and I've loved all the explanations you've given. They've all been really good. One of the things that I remember you telling one time, you told a story similar to the one you just told about how everybody's trying to get the bill first and pay the bill at the restaurant, and you realized at one point that you were never letting somebody else buy the restaurant bill for you, buy the dinner for you. You were never letting somebody give you a gift. And you realized that in the process of doing that, you were cutting yourself off from being appreciative, from being grateful, from feeling the wonderful feelings that come along with being the recipient of a gift.
Yeah. And during that time, I was deferring to everyone. So it wasn't even gifts. It was preferences. It was people asking me, Cindy, where would you like to go to lunch? And I would say, I don't care. Where do you want to go? Let's go. Where do you want to go? What movie do you want to see? Oh, I don't care. It was always, I deferred to everybody for years about everything. And I think part of that was that I wanted to be seen as kind and loving and generous. And certainly people saw me that way. And then one day I had the experience where a group that always met together, me and some other people, we met together every week or two for like 5 years. And we would just discuss things like this. You know, it was kind of a spiritual mastermind. We would talk about ideas and we would go to lunch together. Sometimes we'd go to an art gallery or, you know, we would meet. We all had kids and we were all running households and we would, some of us were working too, and we would just try to find a couple hours, you know, every other week to meet together. And one day I couldn't meet with them because my young sons at the time were sick home from school. And they called me after the meeting and they told me what they had talked about. And then they told me what they had decided for the following week. And I felt really angry. And at the time I didn't let myself ever get angry either. So that was frustrating on top of anger. It's like frustrated with myself for feeling angry. And I was very nice, of course. And I said, okay, that's great. That sounds good. And it did. They knew me well enough. They knew that I wasn't going to, you know, complain about this place we all loved, but they also knew something that I had taught them. And that is that every time they asked me what I wanted, I said I didn't care. So they just stopped asking.
Right.
And I remember feeling really angry and then saying, oh, why do I feel so angry? And I heard my higher, wiser self, I guess. It wasn't an audible voice, but it was as clear as I've ever heard it. And this was probably, I mean, my kids were little and they're in their 30s now. So this was like 25 years ago. The voice that I heard said, oh, I thought you wanted to be last. You always put yourself last. It just took my breath away. It still does. I thought, oh my gosh. And I decided right then that the next time somebody asked me what I wanted, I would lie before I would say nothing. I would make up something. You know, if somebody said, where do you want to go for lunch? I would just think of any restaurant I knew and I would just say the name of that restaurant. If they asked me what movie I wanted to see, I would just, the first movie I could think of, I would just say it. I was not going to say, I don't care. Let's do what you want to do. And it was so hard at first. Somebody, I remember I planned this out. I said, okay, I cannot do this anymore. I cannot put myself last because the whole world is starting to put me last and it's not fun. And so I decided right then, I was like, okay, it's going to happen. In the next 48 hours, I'm going to have some opportunity. Somebody's going to ask me and I'm just going to have to deal with it. And I remember someone asking me what I wanted for a meal or something. And I was like, I was like completely blank. And I think I said, salmon.
I love it.
I like spit out something that I never even really eat, right? It's just like some food that popped into my head. But it got easier. And you told me something amazing on one of our very first podcasts. Because I tell this story a lot for two reasons. One is I think it's super important, right? And you said that there was a doctor that worked with people that had been in accidents or had brain damage.
Yes.
In the area of their brain that produces emotions. So these people were, they were challenged with ever experiencing any kind of emotion.
Right.
And what the doctor noticed is that whenever he asked them their preference about something, they didn't have one.
Yes.
And he could ask them 100 times, where do you want to go for lunch? And they would say, I don't know, let's go where you want. And he would say, no, you're going to pick the restaurant this time. And they just couldn't do it because they had no preferences. And what we talked about was the realization that our preferences are directly connected to emotion.
Yes.
And so when we always defer, we start to lose our preferences because we don't exercise them. And when we start to lose our preferences, it also makes it more difficult for us to access emotion and to have an emotional experience. And that was like a big eye-opener for me, realizing that if I want to be able to experience the brilliance of joy and happiness and all of those things, then I need to know what my preferences are and I need to exercise them. Now, that doesn't mean that I never say to my husband, where do you want to go? Or what movie? I mean, sure I do, but there's a balance now. It's there's a balance.
And it's important. I agree with you entirely. And I love that example too. In fact, the doctor in question is a researcher. I believe he's at either USC or UCLA. I can't remember which one. And he specializes in working with and studying these people. And the story that he tells, it almost has like a mean twist to it, but it's both funny and mean at the same time, because he'll ask them, where do you want to go for lunch? And what they'll say is, well, restaurant A has really great food, but their lines are really long. Now, restaurant B, they don't have long lines at all, but the food's not very good. But restaurant C has good food, but they're kind of across town. That's a long trip. And they'll just list all these different restaurants. They will never be able to make a selection for the very reason that you gave, that you have to be able to connect to an emotion in order to have a preference. Not to make a choice. They could flip a coin and make a choice, but having a preference is the key to that. And the reason I think that's so important, I'm glad you brought it up, is if we aren't practicing, and I mean literally practicing, the art of preferring, life becomes grayer. Life starts to lose its flavor. It starts to lose its pizzazz. We start to go lower on that emotional guidance scale on a regular basis. And until we're willing to start establishing preferences again, it is harder to get up on that scale. We have to be willing to establish preferences in order to climb the scale.
You know, I think part of that too, you said life becomes gray. And, you know, gray, colorless.
Yes.
And when you think of color, there's a spectrum.
Yeah. Right?
And there's not only a spectrum of color, but there's a spectrum of brightness or saturation. And when you start deferring all the time and not exercising your preferences, you lose the highs and the lows.
You do.
And your life experience will become flat. Flat and grayscale.
Yep.
No color, no brightness, no ups and no downs. Now, you know, the benefit of that, maybe no downs. Great. But there's no highs either.
Right.
Right. And that, I mean, I had that experience before, going through, getting out of an abusive marriage and then spending 5 years getting whole again and then starting to date someone and realizing that everything was wonderful because, you know, it feels really great to fall in love. And then something happening, a small argument or something that just felt like it was the end of the world, and it really was not. And I thought to myself, I don't know if I can do this. I can't do this relationship stuff. And I was a relationship coach, so that wasn't a very comfortable thing to be thinking.
Yeah, I would think, right?
And then I realized that it was vulnerability. I had allowed myself to be really vulnerable with this person. And that sometimes when we allow ourselves to be vulnerable, sometimes we get hurt.
Yes.
But it's that same allowance. It's that same vulnerability that allows us to experience the magic of love and passion and joy. So I had to ask myself, is it worth it? Do I really want to shut my preferences down, put all these walls up, close my heart up, harden my heart, so I don't have to feel ever any kind of hurt? But then I also won't be feeling all of this wonderful joy. And I'm not saying at all that those two things in your life should be equal or in your relationship. The pain part, the vulnerability that hurts, should be very, very minimal, 1%, you know? Not 50%.
Right.
Certainly yes. Not 80%. It should be very, very minimal, but that vulnerability and openness that allows you to experience a great, wonderful, passionate relationship and allows you to trust someone completely, right? That's also causes you to be a little bit open, and sometimes you may get hurt.
Sure.
But it's part of life, and that pain and that hurt that we sometimes feel shows us, if we're willing to look at it, it will show us information about ourselves. It shows us what we value. It shows us where we're growing. It's our edge of growth. So it's all good information.
It's very good information. It also occurs to me that when we're talking about this stuff, it's very similar to a concept that comes up in typical law of attraction type conversations, which is the concept that is sometimes called contrast, other times it's called polarity. And it essentially is a recognition that our lives are not all fairy dust. They're not all wonderful. Sunshine and sweets and all that kind of stuff. It's a mixture of stuff. And we actually go through life and experience some stuff that we really don't like very much. As you point out, it's not like that has to be a part, regular part of our life in a large chunk. We have a lot of control over that. But by the same token, and this is why it comes up in LOA conversations, it's why, one of the reasons we came here. We came here to experience the whole gamut of it. And I think the real trick that all of us who have kind of taken on the task, I guess you could call it, of becoming better conscious, more conscious in our selections of what it is we want to have happen in our lives and how we're going to think about it and what we want to attract and all of this stuff. Those of us who focused on that are realizing that we really don't want to live a life without the contrast. What we want to be able to do is experience that contrast and not feel taken advantage of, not feel beaten up about it, not beating ourselves up about it, not making ourselves feel depressed. I mean, it's Alex King, who's one of our co-hosts here on the show, said it really well the other day. She said, I don't want to have a life full of drama. I want to watch the drama on TV. And that's pretty much it. I mean, that's kind of a funny way of saying it, but that's pretty much what we're trying to do here in this life. We come in knowing we're going to experience that stuff. It's one of the reasons we come here. We just don't want to immerse ourselves to the point where it just brings us down.
Well, and I think a lot of it's our ego thinks it only wants things that feel good.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But like you said, we actually came here to experience the full gamut of human experiences. And so there is a place where we can actually learn how to navigate those more uncomfortable sides of experience by letting them be information for us, by even enjoying it. You know, sensation is just sensation. We label it good or bad. And one of the ways we talk about that is like when your muscles ache. Now, if you wake up one morning and your muscles ache and your brain tells you this is, you know, the flu or something, yeah, it feels terrible. But if you worked out really hard the day before and you wake up and your muscles ache, you may say, oh, this is awesome. No pain, no gain. You know, I think my workout's working. This is good. This is a good thing. And it's easier to deal with that way. You know, I was talking to a group. I'm running a game right now. And it's kind of a coaching program that's couched in gaming terms. Mm-hmm. And I was explaining to them, you know, there's this Buddhist concept that says pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional. Because suffering is usually connected to the stories we're telling ourselves about the pain that we're experiencing. We're making it mean something's wrong with us or, you know. But what about all the times we actually sign up for suffering?
Yes. Yeah.
Right? Like, I have a whole desk full of Hanayama puzzles from Japan, and some of them are rated, like, pretty high. And so, you know, they cost about $15 a piece. And so I always joke, you know, if you've got $15 and a free weekend, you can buy yourself a whole lot of suffering. Mm-hmm. 'Cause those puzzles are really hard. And you're supposed to take them apart and then put them back together. And sometimes it's hard enough to get it apart. And you feel like, oh, yes, I got it apart. And then you remember, oh, no, now I have to put it back together. And then putting it back together is usually harder, like much harder. And so, but what happens is that when you're done with it, you've accomplished something. That feels good, right? So even though you may scream a few times when you're trying to work that puzzle, you paid for it and you signed up for it. So doesn't seem so bad as just the kind of suffering that comes from some unwanted bad news or, you know, a hurricane hits your house or something, right? It's like, that's different. But is it different?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? The question really is, how are we perceiving it? Are we perceiving it as different, or are we perceiving it as the same? And that's another word that comes up a lot in conversation about law of attraction, perception. How do we perceive stuff? What's our perspective on stuff?
Yeah, because it changes everything to have a different perspective.
It does.
Part of that is recognizing, you know, what, like you, I think you talked about this the last time we were together, payoffs.
Yeah.
Like what's the payoff here? You know, you think about so many times I've heard people tell me that they've gotten sick, right? And they're like, oh, this is the worst possible time for me to get sick. It's like I was supposed to, you know, how I was going to work this weekend. I had this project and now I'm sick. And it's like, well, maybe the payoff is that your body is really like saying you need to slow down and lay in bed, right? And sometimes we have these payoffs that are subconscious. We don't even think about them. There was a story about a woman that was in a wheelchair and had really good care of people caring for her and meeting all her needs. And not only that, but because they were there caring for her, she had the companionship and friendship with them. And that something happened where the doctor was like, this will cure you. And she didn't really want the cure and couldn't figure out why, and then realized because there were payoffs to being in the wheelchair.
Yes.
People were doing things for her. She had companionship, like all these things. And sometimes we're in a situation that's painful and there's suffering, but there's also some payoff. I mean, I've been in that situation myself where I've realized, oh, okay. So sometimes I ask myself if I'm going through some kind of suffering, what are you getting out of this?
Yep.
Like, really? There's some reason why you want to be going. I'm not hard on myself, right? But I recognize that I am a powerful creator. And so I will say, what is the upside of this? And sometimes just get a notebook out and just start writing. Oh, these are the things. Well, actually, this part is kind of good, and I'm liking this part of it. And then I start realizing, oh my goodness, I created this because I wanted these parts, and I can have these parts without having this situation.
Hmm. Yeah.
Then you can.
By the way, I don't know if you're aware of this, but the whole concept of a payoff, particularly in a negative situation or, you know, a victim kind of situation, the person who first introduced that to me was you. I don't know if you knew that.
I didn't know that.
When we started doing shows together, what, 3 years ago, something like that? And it was very early on. I remember doing an episode with you where I was asking about people who are victims all the time and have a perpetual pattern of being victims. And I was asking you, why has that happened? And that was part of your explanation, that there is a payoff. There's a reason why they remain victims. It's not just because, you know, the world is against them. They're contributing by having a payoff that makes it worthwhile for them to continue the pattern.
Every energy level has a payoff. Every energy level, whether it's, and we can say that like the emotional scale. Every level on the emotional ladder actually has pros and cons. Actually has payoffs, even though we would think, well, nobody wants to be depressed and down in the dumps and despondent and hopeless. But in a situation where you're feeling that way, there may actually be a couple payoffs in the situation for you that you just hadn't noticed. There's a story about a young man that no matter what he did, he was just not able to make it financially. And, you know, one thing or another would happen. Some people would say it's sabotage, but I mean, one thing or another would happen and he would always end up, you know, back at home where his parents were taking care of him. And then one day he had an aha moment that, oh my gosh, this is really the root of it, is that I just want to feel taken care of. And then everything shifted for him. Why? Well, because at that point you realize, oh my goodness, I am taken care of, and I can still have that love and care and go be successful. It's not an either or, but so many times we think things are either or, and we don't realize that they can be and.
It's a great point. Yeah, they can be and. And the more we remember that, the better off we are. There's no doubt in my mind about that. I do know that we've talked about this kind of thing a lot and in various contexts, coming at it from various angles. And the same phrase keeps coming to my mind. Again, a phrase you taught me. That phrase is personal responsibility or radical personal responsibility. Basically being willing to acknowledge all of the stuff that we're attracting into our lives on a daily basis, not just the nice stuff, not just, you know, the beautiful homes and the big incomes and all that kind of stuff, but all of it. And that is where a lot of the big challenge is when we look at this whole concept of how the law of attraction works, what source energy is, how it is to be a conscious creator, is recognizing we attracted all of it. I mean, one of my favorite things to say is, damn, I did it again.
Well, it's a good thing to remember that blame is a very low energy.
Yes.
And so when we say that we're taking radical responsibility, we're not saying that, number one, I'm not blaming someone else for my problems. I'm going to take radical responsibility, but that also includes I'm not blaming myself.
Right.
Right. And when we talk about the word victim, you know, sometimes we have experiences in life where we are the victim. Someone victimizes us. Sure. I mean, if I'm walking down the street and someone robs me, number one, it's not my fault. I don't believe I created that consciously. And yeah, I was victimized, but it's what I do with that afterwards. It's how I respond to it. It's my, you know, responsibility, my ability to respond. How do I respond to that? Do I continue for the next 5 years to say to everyone, I was the victim of a robbery. I'm a victim. Someone robbed me. That, you know, I didn't deserve it. I mean, that all may be true, but when it becomes our story, then we start kind of marinating in that energy. And it's so much better to say, yes, this thing happened. Here's how I dealt with it. Here's how I replaced the things that were taken from me. Here's how I, you know, here's how I took action in my community to make sure this didn't happen to someone else. Here's what I did with that. Here's how I took the clay of that circumstance and molded it into a sculpture that's beautiful now, right? I took responsibility for my own stuff. And so it's not about blame. Or, you know, there's this thing you'll hear in LOA circles that talk about shaming or blaming the victim.
Oh, yeah.
And that's like, well, you created that. Well, that's not even helpful. We talked about that earlier.
Yes.
About love, right? Yeah. It's like when even if we were to say this person brought something on themselves, we all bring things on ourselves.
Yeah.
At one time or another, right?
Oh, yeah.
But when someone is suffering, that's really not helpful, is to let them know that they brought it on themselves. It may be more helpful to show them some love and kindness and compassion and see how you can help them out of their suffering a little bit, and then help them take responsibility so they can climb out of that place.
The word compassion is an interesting word. I haven't looked it up lately, and so this is not going to be particularly accurate, but there are really two different definitions of it. One is sort of an American definition, and the other one is sort of an old title, like old Greek or old Latin or something like that. I don't remember exactly what the root is. But one form is feeling sorry for somebody else, and the other form is giving love to somebody else. And there are two entirely different meanings to the word compassion. I just wanted to bring that in because I think people have different ideas about what compassion really is. And we're really talking about one kind. We're not really talking about the other kind. We're talking about the kind of giving love.
Yeah, and I think that the one kind is closer to maybe the word pity. Well, the way we think of pity, we feel pity for someone. But with compassion, the way I'm seeing it is that I see that person as whole and as capable and full of potential to be whatever they want, to create whatever they want to create, to move forward in their life in a meaningful way. And there's a generosity that's built into that. And it's a generosity of spirit, of visioning someone having a measure of their own power, which we all have to whatever degree. We all have a spark of power there. And so it's the compassion to know that they can overcome the suffering, whatever it is that they're suffering with, that they have the power to overcome it, and that we want to help, right?
Yeah. Right.
We want to help lift them out of that.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's not a, I mean, because compassion doesn't say, hey, man, I know you have the power. Go over there and take care of it.
Yeah, right.
Compassion says, I believe in you, and I believe in your human spirit. I believe that you have what it takes to overcome this, and I want to help. How can I help? You know, one of my very first coaches, it was a peer coach when I was in coaching school in 2009, I think. I was really struggling with something, and it was like a bunch of things happened in my life all at once. It kind of felt like when it rains, it pours, and I was just at my wit's end and was really suffering with something. And I think back, and she was a brand new coach, right? We both were. We were both still in school. And looking back, I kind of feel sorry for her, right? Because I'm like, oh, my gosh, I was such a mess. So she had me as a client that day. But she said the wisest thing to me. You know, as coaches, we don't have all the answers. Sometimes we give advice, but mostly coaching is not about advice. It's about helping you find your own answers. Mm-hmm. And I have the tools to do that, right? But she said to me, what could I say to you right now that would make you feel a little better?
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I was crying. I said, I guess I just need somebody to tell me that everything's going to be okay. I still get emotional when I think about it. And she said, Cindy, everything's going to be okay. And that sounds so silly, right? Because I just told her what to say. And then she said it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was such a powerful moment.
Sure.
And that's what I'm talking about a generosity of spirit. Is she was willing to not be the one with all the answers. She was willing to, you know, to be vulnerable in her ask of me, like, I don't know what to say, but I know you do. What could I say to you that would help you feel a little bit better? I just need somebody to tell me everything's going to be okay. Cindy, everything is going to be okay. And it was like a momentous shift that I had right then, just hearing someone say that. So she trusted me to know what I needed.
Right.
Right? And that's so generous. And it's like, that's what we can do for people when we see someone suffering.
Now, there was another episode that I did recently with my crew that we record on Friday, Linda and Rita and I, and our table audience hasn't met them yet, but they'll be meeting them sometime shortly. But in this particular episode, we invited back somebody as a guest who had been on the show two or three times before. He is ex-military. His name is Chief Harold Peck, and he is ex-military, and after he got out of the military, he basically had to leave because he had been in so long doing so much dangerous stuff that he had worn his body out. His body literally couldn't keep up anymore. And when he left the military, he went through, there's a whole story about he went through this mental crisis. He actually was close to suicide, I mean, a whole bunch of stuff. He was dealing with PTSD, and he makes the point that the military people and the people in the VA and so forth, they teach him all about PTSD. They teach him all about, you know, here are all of the different methods that are currently used to handle it, to treat yourself, to help yourself through it and so forth. And he said, none of it worked for me. Well, he took a walk through Colorado this summer, a 500-mile walk, not on the roads, across country, the hard way. And there's a whole story. That's what he came on the show to tell us about, what happened on that story of that trip. But he said he discovered something partway through that trip that just changed his whole way of thinking, not only about the trip, but about his whole life. Because he'd been taught, you know, here's how you handle the fact that you were, your mindset was damaged, your mentality was damaged because of all the things you saw. You have this PTSD, you're on all these meds, you have these various other elements, you've had back issues, you've had all these other things, and here are all the different ways to treat them. And the realization he came to was, I'm not a broken person. They're treating me like a broken person, but when I look inside myself, I'm not a broken person. I mean, that was, you can imagine how much of a shift that was for him. But what's your impression when you hear that story?
Well, the first thought that came into my mind is that idea that we are more than our body. You know, if you lose a finger or a hand or an arm or a leg, you're all still there. The part of you that's not your body is still whole.
Yeah.
Right? And I think it sounds like that's what he, like, discovered. It's like, wait, I'm not broken. Yeah, you know, I may have some pain in my back from all this physical work I've done. It doesn't make me broken.
Right.
Yeah.
And by the way, once he came to that realization, the pain went away in his back. He was able to do the whole walk a whole lot easier. The PTSD stopped being an issue. He had his big thing he's been doing since he left the military is he wanted to help other veterans dealing with PTSD. Now he has a whole new perspective that he can use to help them. So it was a pretty big breakthrough for him. It was really big.
Well, that's amazing. You know, the idea that our body, our dreams, nighttime dreams, and our bodies, our physical bodies, often speak to us in metaphors. I had a client years ago that called me, but she actually texted me because she needed an emergency session with me. And I said, sure, I had an open spot. I was actually outside in a shopping mall. I took the call on my cell phone, sitting on a park bench in the middle of all these people. And she said, I can't move. She said, I'm on the couch. The physical therapist has worked with me. The chiropractors work with me. And I'm in so much pain and I just can't move. And I said, what's the worst part of this? And she said, I can't stand up. And I said, well, that's interesting because last time we spoke, there were some things going on with you and some of your superiors. And we decided that you needed to stand up for yourself.
Oh.
Are you ready to stand up for yourself? And she said, oh my gosh, I'm getting a call right now from those people. So she said, I think I know what I need to do. So we hung up. The next day, 24 hours later, she sent me a picture of herself hiking up in the canyons.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So as soon as she stood up for herself, metaphorically, all the pain left and she could stand up physically. Her body was telling her something.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah, really good story. And a great way to end our episode. That's really, really cool. By the way, before we're done, I want to remind people, particularly our new listeners and viewers on Cable Access, we have an LOA Today app. You can find it on both the iPhone and the Android phone. Just go to your App Store or Play Store and do a search for LOA Today. It'll pop right up. It's got lots of goodies in it, including an ebook by our friend Cindy here, The Lovely Magician's Guide to Soulmate Success. So check it out. And Cindy, this has been a good conversation, and I'm looking forward to the next show that we do together.
Me too.
All right. So good stuff. So thank you very much. Thank you. Jeffrey, by the way, was typing up a storm in the live stream. I'm sorry I didn't get to you, Jeffrey, but great stuff. But thank you very much, live streamers. And thank you especially to our podcast listeners as well. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.